It's a brown bagger, my neighbor calls across the way. Seeing me gaze at the single pear that hangs from the smallest tree in my yard. And he means it will ripen more quickly if I pick and store it in a paper sack. I thank him for the tip. He wants to be helpful. But picking the fruit before it's ready to fall is not what I want. How to explain it's not hunger that stops me, but astonishment. The tree, only a sapling, has produced this pear, just one, like a bell announcing. Life pouring itself out for more life. And now, my sudden desire to see not only its celadon skin, little planet, illumination, green ongoing, but deeper in, where the stone-filled flesh is hard and cool, and then farther to the ovary wall, where the pips, tucked into their tiny cups, contain the elegant code for roots, trunk, limb, and white flower. Its need for light and grace of sweet rain. The urge it was before it was named, and the secret this little tree knows about bearing. Her fruit, hers to keep and let go. Good morning. I'm so grateful to be here with you this morning. I offer my poem called Simply Pear because it helps me to say something to you today about how we see. It's true, I watched for that one and only pear so closely I must have looked ridiculous from the road. Small and fragile seeming when we first planted it, the tree appeared unlikely to survive. Her slim trunk and stick-like branches looking then like a child's first pencil sketch, tree. I watched it leaf out and blossom that first spring, her flowers spare but sweet-smelling, but I did worry the summer would pass without fruit. When that single pear began to swell, no bigger in the end than what would fit in the cup of my hand, I felt elated. Studying how it grew and changed day after day, week after week, brought me into relationship with that tree, such that I could see not only its form, what it was and what it could produce, but its deeper in reality, its connection to the larger web of being, its elegant design, its need for care and time. Not the timing of utility or the timing of commerce, but the time it takes for any precious thing to come into its own fulfillment. This is the same kind of attention Mary Oliver refers to in her good poem, Summer Story, that Lee read at the beginning of the service. Oliver watches the thirsty hummingbird sink its face into the trumpet vine until the watching turns into feeling. And she feels herself become a small bird with a terrible hunger. I understood my neighbor's instruction that I should harvest that single pear, ripen it in a paper bag, and then eat it. All things have their uses. Pears, after all, are sweet on the tongue. But for me, the nature of that pear had come clear in the process of watching it become itself. Its attractiveness or utility as a thing to pluck and eat had fallen away, and its life, its pareness, revealed what it belongs to and what it bears. Much of what we call creativity, our theme this month here at South Church, has to do, I would argue, with how we see. Theologian Martin Buber says there are two kinds of perception. One establishes the I-it relation, in which the I imposes on or extracts something from the it or the other. This is a seeing shaped by utility and commerce. The other brings us into the I-thou relationship, in which our meaning and purpose is revealed in communion with the other. In this construct, there is no I without the thou. There is no I without you. The story of how the fox and the little prince establish ties is helpful here. Theirs is a slow and shy practice, showing up at the appointed time each day, offering sustained and quiet attention, first out of the corner of the eye, and finally face to face. Over time, as each watches and comes to trust the other, there's a narrowing of the distance between them. They see finally more truly, not just any fox, but this fox. Not just any boy, but this boy. Creativity itself is this process of establishing ties, of opening to the life of the other without, as poet John Keats suggests, imposing ourselves. In this view, creativity is not so much a process of self-expression as it is a process of self-emptying. The setting aside of all received ideas, all our accumulated assumptions, expectations, and desires, so that we can see not just the surface, but the inner light. The poet Rainer Maria Rilke coined the word in-seeing to describe this quality of attention. "Can you imagine with me," he writes, "how glorious it would be to in-see, for example, a dog as one passes by? And I don't mean inspect, which is only a human gymnastic, by means of which one immediately comes again outside on the other side of the dog. No, not that. But to let oneself precisely into the dog's very center, the point where it begins to be a dog, the place where God would have sat down for a moment when the dog was finished in order to watch it, under the influence of its first embarrassments and inspirations, and to know that it was good, that nothing was lacking, that it could not have been better made." My dear friend, the poet McKeel McBride, whose work has much to do with seeing, has a poem called Lucky that perhaps some of you know. It goes like this. "I'm late, I need to pay, but he's ahead of me ordering ice cream for his dog. No chocolate. The waitress suggests vanilla with just a tiny bit of fudge. No chocolate," he says again. The exchange goes on like this for a long time. Finally, they settle on strawberry. Now, he wants coffee, one sugar, no milk, so he'll have something to drink while the dog's eating. The bill comes to $3. He empties a pocket, gliding quarter after quarter across the counter, savoring the slow slide of each cool coin. By now, I'm so late, there's no chance I'll get to where I thought I was supposed to be going, so I give up and I ask, what kind of dog? He takes his time in turning to answer, pit bull. a leashless pause. And part Borzoi, a rescue, her first trip downtown. I wanted to get her something special so she'd know it's safe among strangers. He's in his 60s and handsome in the way that distant mountains seem both beautiful and private. Now late is beginning to feel like right on time. Grateful, I stop outside to watch him drink with such pleasure hot coffee in 90-degree weather. Gently, he leans over to steady the paper cup of ice cream for his dog, Lucky. Her tail's tucked between her legs, and I see in the way she looks up that in her life, before this, there was never the smallest pleasure without punishment. She's afraid anyone, even the man holding the cup, might start kicking her again. Except it all tastes so rich and sweet and cool that she can't help but give herself to the goodness of it, with the almost unbearable joy, the abandoned feel, when someone kind finally turns to them, sees them, really sees them, and says, "You. It's you I have been looking for all my life." Such a good poem, in part because we recognize ourselves in it. Who among us hasn't felt trapped in a too long line, impatient, even annoyed with what's in our way? Our own purposes and time more important and pressing than anything else unfolding around us. The woman behind the counter, the man and his dog, even the summery day, all these are obscured, if not entirely rendered invisible by the speakers, which is to say our own self-involvement. It's not until the speaker sets aside her rush and bother that she begins to behold the man's essential privacy and the dog's first pleasure in human kindness. As listeners, we have the feeling that when the speaker finally perceives all this, a kind of union occurs. The boundaries between the speaker, the man, and the dog fall away. Seeing, says the philosopher Paul Tillich, really seeing is a kind of union, a seeing shaped by love. He's speaking about compassion, which is, after all, the fruit of any creative endeavor. The very word seeing carries within the husk of its linguistic form a spiritual charge. To behold means to perceive the preciousness and sacredness of the other, to apprehend with the heart. Those of you who know Saint-Exupéry's Little Prince, a section of which I shared with our children, will recognize these familiar words. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. A final poem. This one is called Rain by Naomi Shihab Nye. A teacher asked Paul what he would remember from third grade. And he sat a long time before writing, "This year, somebody touched me on the shoulder," and turned his paper in. Later, she showed it to me as an example of her wasted life. The words he wrote were large as houses in a landscape. He wanted to go inside them and live. He could fill in the little windows of O and D and be safe, while outside birds building nests in drain pipes knew nothing of the coming rain. The teacher in this poem, we love and sympathize with her because she works very hard to do what she is tasked with doing. Perhaps she expected Paul to write about learning to multiply or about checking out his first chapter book from the library. When Paul writes, "This year, Somebody touched me on the shoulder. The teacher sees suddenly and radically that the gesture, the gentle touch of a possible friend, had been more important for Paul than anything that had ever appeared on the board or in a book. That touch was as large as a house he could enter and be safe in. In this revelation comes her deepest understanding of Paul and his experience, and we sense that the insight changes how she will go forward, not only in her work, but in her life. Because, after all, she too knows the saving power of a kind touch. Engaging creatively with the world involves all kinds of things, of course, a certain wildness and risk-taking, chaos before order, intuition and feeling before reason and judgment, a habit of mind that's essentially connective, often through intentionally combining unlike things to discover a surprising coherence. But at the heart of all these things is the practice of watching, of witness, of seeing not with the eyes so much as with the heart. And in this sense, we may all be artists, daily trying to set to one side what it is we think we know, so that we can behold what is before us. Not just any pair, but this pair. Not just any dog, this dog. Not just any child, this child. May it be so.